It's just another work day, and any jackanapes who thinks else should be boiled in his own pudding.
But, sir, Christmas is a time for giving, a time to be with one's family.
I say bah, humbug.
I don't care. I say Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas.
Well said, Master Fred.
Cratchit, what are you doing?
I was just trying to keep my hands warm, sir.
And what are you doing here, nephew?
I've come to give you a wreath and invite you to Christmas dinner.
Well, I suppose you're going to have plump goose with chestnut dressing?
Yep.
And will you have plum pudding and lemon sauce?
Yeah, boy.
And candied fruits with spiced sugar cakes?
Yeah, will you come?
Are you daft, man? You know I can't eat that stuff. Here's your wreath back. Now out, out, out! Bah! Humbug!
Merry Christmas!
And a bah humbug to you!
Back to the bin.
What a surprise. I didn't expect you to call me.
Well, you know, it's not really what you're expecting at Christmas time, is it?
No, I was just sitting here by the fireside, you know, lamenting the joys of the holiday season because, you know, it is what it is.
Well, if you are listening to this, well, hello, everybody, and welcome to Back to the Bins. I'm Paul Spitaro, and I'm here wishing a holly jolly Christmas to my good buddy, Mr. David Pascarella.
Oh, ho, ho.
And if you are listening to this right now, it is the weekend before Christmas, and I hope everybody is in a Christmassy kind of mood. Bill and Scott are on assignment today, but I'm hoping we might get a little word in from them at some point before this episode is over. In fact, if I get that, it would appear right here.
So, this is Christmas. And what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so, this is Christmas. I hope you had fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one, without any fear. And so this is Christmas, for weak and for strong, the rich and the poor ones, the road is so long. And so happy Christmas, for black and for white, for yellow and red ones, let's stop all the fight. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one, without any fear. And so this is Christmas, and what have you done? Another year over, and a new one just begun. And so, happy Christmas. We hope you have fun. The near and the dear ones, the old and the young. A very Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Let's hope it's a good one, without any fear.
Last Christmas, I gave you my heart, but the very next day, you gave it away. This year, to save me from tears, I give it to someone special, special.
And Dr. Zaius was better than his word. He did it all and infinitely more. And to Zira and Cornelius, who did not stand trial for heresy, he was a second father. He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a chief defender of the faith as good old Ape City ever knew. And it was always said of him that he knew how to keep Christmas well, if any simian alive possessed the knowledge. May that be truly said of us, and all of us. And so, as Tiny Taylor observed,
Damn you! God damn you all to hell!
If you just heard empty sound there, it means I did not get a message from them. But we will see.
It may be a Christmas miracle.
You can only hope. So for Christmas, we went back to the, I guess, what, you know, what we used to do is pick a couple of Christmas books and go ahead and synopsize them and talk about them. So I think, as is our wont, I picked a Marvel book, Dave picked a DC book, and nobody picked an indie book. So,
just because we're not all dedicated to the indies.
I like a lot of indie stuff, but I've always been much more of a mainstream guy. I've been primarily a Marvel collector from the start. Like, my collection is probably 2/3 Marvel and then 1/3 DC and other. And the other is really just one long box.
Yeah, you've got me beat. I have to be 90%, I would say, is DC.
Oh, I got kind of an inclination to collect all of the issues from Atlas Seaboard when they had put up the Upstart Company in the 70s with, you know, a bunch of different series. So I have almost all of those at this point. I'm just missing a select hand few. And it's funny because one of the series I'm missing is one that I normally wouldn't have any interest in getting. It's Vicky, which is like kind of like a Archie kind of book. And they had, I think, 4 issues of that. And I never, ever see that in any stores. So I get the feeling that one might actually cost a pretty penny, which means I probably will never get it because I don't think I'd pay any significant money for it.
What year did that come out?
It was like in the 73, 74, like around then. So it would have been before your time.
Before the dark times.
Yes.
Literally before the dark times, by about 5 years.
But they did, they did bring in some like top talents to try and see if they could make a name for themselves. And, they came out with, I thought, some pretty decent stuff. You know, it was all over the map, different kinds of stories. And like I said, I've collected most of it at this point. I'm just missing a handful.
What would your definition of an indie be? Would Charleston be considered an indie? Well, not really, because they were around from the year of the flood.
Well, to me, anything that's not Marvel or DC is indie in my mind. And I know that they don't fit the strict definition of it, but, you know, I just consider those the two, you know, the big two, and everybody else is indie.
Yeah. So the only stuff of any significance I ever bought that was really indie is I used to buy those Fighting Navy comics. I think they were Charleston.
Yeah,
I bought in back of the, back issue bins, I bought the Emergency. There were only 4 issues of that.
Those were Charlton.
But, not really. Unless you counted, like, Wildstorm, I have a few things.
Well, Wildstorm was just a sub company of DC, right?
Right? Yeah.
So I don't know. I don't know that they count, but it's kind of, you know, I think everybody's free to kind of make their own definition on that.
Well, I guess the G.I. Joe stuff that came out under Image and Devil's Due and Skybox, or whoever the hell has it now. I guess that would be indie.
Yeah. See, you're an indie. You're indie all over the place.
I used to be Cowboys and Indians back then.
So, I guess I'll jump right in now because I have the older book. Usually, we do the Marvel first, and I have the older book on top of that. So, I chose Hero for Hire number 7, which has a cover date of December 12th, 1972. A release date of December 12th, 1972, and a cover date of March of 1973. It has a cover by Billy Graham and Danny Crespi, and it shows some kind of maniacal guy. Says, "Merry Christmas, world, and goodbye," and he's pressing a button as Luke Cage looks out the window seeing an explosion, and then in the background we see a nice jolly Christmas tree. The story is written by Steve Englehart, penciled by George Tuska, inked by Billy Graham, colored by Dave Hunt, not Mike, lettered by John Costanza, and edited by Roy Thomas.
I never knew Billy Graham did artwork.
Superstar Billy Graham or The Preacher?
Oh, it's not the same guy, The Preacher?
No, I don't think it is.
Yeah, I thought it being a Christmas issue and all.
So, the story is titled Jingle Bombs. And the synopsis is as follows. On Christmas Eve, Luke Cage is spending time at the clinic where Noah and Claire work. Luke happens to spy a child being beaten by a man in Dickinson-style dress. Stopping him, Luke learns that the man's name is Marley, and he certainly acts his part, telling Luke that he was beating on the boy for charging him 15 cents for a newspaper when he never paid more than two, before disappearing into the winter weather. Taking the boy into the clinic for medical aid, Luke is unaware that this was orchestrated by Marley, who wanted to see if there were any good Samaritans left in the world. Before leaving with Claire, Luke is warned by Bernstein that Phil Fox has been nosing around and trying to get a story about Noah's clinic, bringing up fears that Noah's past might reveal Luke's past as a criminal. Later, as Luke and Claire are out for a walk, they encounter what appears to be a war vet. Upon giving him some change, he has a bout of shell shock and attempts to shoot them with an automatic weapon. Luke quickly disarms the man and breaks his gun. Feeling sorry for the man, they leave him be. This vet, however, turns out to be Marley, once more continuing the test he started earlier. After taking Claire out for dinner, the two are attacked by Marley yet again, this time dressed like a futuristic policeman right out of George Orwell's 1984, demanding their identification cards and attacking Luke with a laser. Luke manages to subdue Marley and turn him over to the police. However, when Luke notices the police car crashed on the side of the road not far after, he sends Claire home in a cab and goes after Marley. Marley gets the drop on Luke, managing to knock him out while disguised as a charity Santa Claus. Waking up, Luke is face-to-face with Marley, who tells him that the entire evening's episode was to see if there was still any good in mankind. Unconvinced, he plans on destroying New York with a nuclear bomb of his own design at dawn. However, before he can detonate the bomb, he is distracted by the sound of someone coming down the chimney. This gives Luke the chance to stop Marley and destroy his detonator. With Marley incapacitated, Luke is surprised to find that the person coming down the chimney was a would-be thief. However, having just saved the city, Luke allows the thief to stumble through his explanation, and the two watch the sunrise as Christmas Day finally arrives. So, I don't remember ever reading this one before, which surprises me because I thought I had read pretty much all of the early Hero for Hire issues. But it really, you know, it really came off as strange to me because I'm not sure what the moral of this story is. I'm not sure that, you know, this guy's trying to see if there's good in mankind. And Luke keeps passing the test. He saves the young boy. He shows charity to the veteran. He turns the futuristic guy over to the police rather than beating the hell out of him. You know, he keeps passing the tests, and yet the guy still wants to destroy the world. So it seems very strange to me. I'm a big Steve Englehart fan. He wrote a lot of my favorite stories of that era, but on this particular instance, I'm not so sure that he really had a good focus on where he was going with this one.
This is it's a ripoff from the Bible, I think. And I may have the prophet wrong, but I think it's the book of Jeremiah, where God threatens to destroy, you know, a city, and I think it's Jeremiah. Someone will know better than me. And Jeremiah the prophet starts to negotiate with God. He's like, if I could find 10, you know, decent people in the city, would you spare it? And he goes, okay, you know, if you can find 10, if you can find 5, if you, you know, comes to, if I could find just one other person. So I think this is a kind of a play on that, where, you know, Luke Cage is, you know, he's the guy we know is good. And he's looking for that, the bad guy's looking for that one other good person that'll give him the excuse to spare the city. I think that's what the play is. But how that pans into Christmas, I have no idea whatsoever.
Yeah, no, I could, you know, hearing that story, I could see, okay, where this kind of follows that route. But again, I still come to, but what's the moral of the story?
New York ain't as bad as... Actually, this is bad because there is no other good person than Luke Cage.
Yeah, well, that's actually true. I have been outspoken in the past about my dislike of artwork by George Tuska, because I feel like his faces all just have this same kind of feel to them, and everybody looks like a big slobbering just like nobody looks nice. The layouts, actually the layouts aren't as horrible as the finished artwork. It's the layouts are okay. It's more or less the you know, the faces and just the general looks of everybody. Although for this particular story, it seems to kind of feel right.
Mm, yeah. This is a very set. It just, I get it's 1972, but it's really just it's like a 70s plot. Do you know what I'm saying?
It feels to me like a 60s plot, to be honest with you. This feels very Silver Age-y to me.
Yeah, see, I get a vibe from some of those 70s shows, like The Bionic Woman or something, where it was, I want to prove that, you know, man is so terrible and I'm going to provoke him to do something and then I'll have an excuse, you know, to destroy the city or whatever.
Well, maybe Captain Kirk would do that. It feels to me, I don't know if you listened or if you recall, a few years back for the Christmas episode, we did an issue of the Teen Titans that had a takeoff on A Christmas Carol. And this feels very similar to that.
Somewhat, yeah.
I think if this story had ended that Luke passed the test and this guy had said, you know what, I had planned to bomb everything and I have you incapacitated and I can, but you've proven to me that there's good in the world and I'm not going to. That would have been a Christmas feel-good story.
Yeah, or if he saw the error of his ways, a la Scrooge. But he doesn't see the error of his ways.
No, not at all. I see the error of his ways. He doesn't so much care.
I'm looking at this art on the first page, where they're in the hospital. The guy sitting in the chair, the balding guy. Does that not remind you of Lex Luthor when they reintroduced them?
Oh, with the
in
the
Man of Steel.
Yeah, a little bit. Only with a, you know, a little bit of a paunch.
Yeah, before it becomes svelte Lex Luthor.
So, I was interested in some of the language here. When Luke first goes out and confronts Marley, he says, "Unhand me, footpad." And I was like, what the heck is, you know, what kind of expression is that? And I assume it was something from, you know, the days of like A Christmas Carol. So, you know, the 1800s or whatever. And I looked it up and apparently a footpad is a highwayman who does things on foot, as opposed to having a horse, I guess.
A low budget highwayman.
Yeah. And then he also calls him Blackguard, which is just another term for evildoer, apparently.
Oh, I didn't realize there was so much homework involved in this one.
Yeah. If I knew there was going to be homework, I was told there'd be no homework.
Doesn't the doctor look like Speed from The Odd Couple?
Absolutely. And there were a couple of spots where I thought the artwork really did stand out. And again, I've been very critical of George Tuska. If you go to page 18, there's two panels showing the bad guy where the use of shadow and colors just kind of looks pretty cool to me. The first panel and then the very middle one.
Yeah.
And then we see some more of that on the next at the bottom of the next page when they're fighting.
Yeah, the bottom corner panel.
And then there was a shot. I'm looking for it now. There was a shot of Luke. Oh, on page 22 at the top right with Luke kind of coming towards the reader in the snow. And I just thought it looked pretty cool. Yep. So despite my not being a fan of George Tuska, I do think there were some areas in here where it stood out to me as pretty good.
I like the policeman. He looks like he's out of, I don't know, an old-time television show with the heavy winter overcoat.
I remember hearing an interview with Steve Englehart, and when this came out, he was basically one of the young up-and-coming writers in Marvel. And Tuska was, more of a crusty old-timer. And apparently he would tell Tuska, I want you to do this, this, and this. And Tuska would just be like, forget it. He would do whatever he felt like doing anyway. So I wonder, with a story like this, if some of the story or the final outcome or whatever is impacted by the fact that maybe Tuska changed some of Englehart's story beats and he had to kind of, put the dialogue in to match the art as opposed to the other way around.
Could very well be. Could very well be. How do you like that computer they have on page 25? I would love to know what the hell all those buttons are for.
Yeah, that's a. It turns out all it is a coffee maker.
Because I get it's supposed to be an atomic bomb, but I don't think the control panel's all that complicated. I mean, to just detonate the thing.
It should just be a big red button.
Right. Like the That's Easy button from Staples.
Yeah. That would do it. With A Christmas Story, you kind of want a feel-good ending. And the ending is that he's thrown off by a guy who was coming in to rob the home. And they just let him go because, I guess, the spirit of Christmas.
Right.
Not really the feel-good ending I'm looking for.
Well, if there was page 29, it would show him getting shoved off the roof.
Yeah, probably. I assume you had never read this before.
Oh, I had never read this. I had never read an issue of Luke Cage, to be honest.
And I'm thinking that this issue did not entice you to want to read more.
No. If I could just be honest for a moment, no. I did see the Netflix series, and I enjoyed the hell out of that. I thought he was a great Luke Cage. This didn't inspire me to ever want to read another issue of this again.
It does kind of get better, and it gets a little bit more. You see a little bit more of what you saw in the Netflix series as the series goes on. So I guess we could rate this.
Okay.
The cover has, to me, almost like a... It's a very... Almost feels like the kind of art you'd expect in Mad Magazine. It's a little bit more cartoony, the guy's face and everything. But it's not bad. It's definitely dramatic. It's not the way the villain appeared when he was getting ready to blow up the world. But, they let you know it's a Christmas issue. And it's, it's got some action, and it's a little atypical because Luke is not facing the reader. He's facing away, looking at the explosion in the background. So I'm going to say... I'm going to say a B minus. I think it's kind of intriguing. The interior art, again, I'm not a huge Tuska fan. In fact, I am not a Tuska fan at all. But I think he's got a couple of panels in here that make it rise above what I usually think of his work. So I'm going to give the artwork here a C plus. I think there's a few panels that really do stand out that I like, and they're very moody in the way that they're presented. The story is just a little too convoluted with no real feel for where it's going. So for that reason, I'm going to give the story a C minus, because I just feel like it could have been so much better. And I'll give the book a C overall.
Yeah, the cover to me, there's almost like a Die Hard vibe I'm getting off it 20 years before Die Hard, with the... building kind of blowing up in the background. Though this is an atomic bomb, which is going to take everybody out. I agree with you. It's very cartoony. The villain kind of looks over the top. It almost reminds me of a villain from the 1940s on the cover. I'm not as big a fan of the cover. I think it's about a C minus. I mean, you've got him saying Merry Christmas, but other than that, unless you blow up the corner on the right hand side, you barely see the Christmas tree. So if you're trying to sell this as a Christmas book, I don't think it's working out. The interior art, I think, is slightly better, but it has great, I'm trying to describe it as, stretches. Like, some of it's all right, some of it's over the top. I think Luke Cage looks decent overall. The nurse looks decent. Speed's good. The bad guy is over the top wacky. And while I like the way the cop is laid out, something about his face is off when you look at it. So I'm going to give the interior art a C minus. The story is just weird. If you had done this same story and had the villain come to the conclusion that, there are good people in the world, and I was wrong about this, and I need to see the good in people, by adding that Scrooge-like revelation, I think so it works as a Christmas story. To me, it doesn't work. It, in fact, proves the opposite of what they're trying, to prove, that there's good people in the city. So, I mean, the story, to me, just fails. I'm going to give that a C-, bordering on a D+, for an overall grade of a C- on this book. Sorry to be negative. Merry effing Christmas. Did we get to that point yet?
I think we've been at that point for a few years now.
Oh, God. Should I jump into mine?
Sure. Why not?
Oh, God. This book, I own this book. I bought this off the newsstand. And when I picked it, I'm going to give you a little peek behind the curtain here. I picked this because it was very text-light, and I didn't have a lot of time to put this together. I remember reading this at the time, and I remember it was, a Christmas story. It was kind of neat. You'll see it involves Superman giving gifts. When I really got into it and saw what Superman's problem is in this book, God, I feel like I'm reliving the past, and I never would have picked this book. It's like they say, what's past this prologue. Well, folks, here we go again. Let me just bring up my synopsis, which I conveniently stolen this year since some people are not here, who shall remain nameless, but hold on a second here. Okay, my book is Superman Volume 2, I guess, from February of 2001. Issue number 165. And had a release date of December 5th, 2000. Going back almost 25 years. And this was a whopping, what's the price on this one? Funny, I don't see it here on the cover. Well, regardless, we're going to skip that piece of information. Okay, we open up. The title is Help. At the farthest edge of the solar system, the Linear Men discover that the planet Pluto has been turned into a new war world. Back on Earth, Superman visits his JLA colleagues, both to give them their Christmas presents and to sound them out about their reactions to Lex Luthor having been elected President of the United States. The Martian Manhunter tells him he can never understand the madness of Earth's political system and promises to back Superman up as soon as Lex Luthor breaks the law. Plastic Man, meanwhile, forces Superman to look on the bright side. There's something worse than Luthor as president. Two Lex Luthors in the White House. And he gives the Martian Manhunter a gift. And the gift he gives him is Choco's cookies. I remember at one point when it was Oreos that were the Martian Manhunter's favorite cookie, but I guess trademark. And Plastic Man is given some rubber bands. Moving right along, Superman goes on to see Aquaman. Aquaman tells Superman that he actually supports Luthor, as he is the first head of state to ever offer Atlantis any public support. When warned by Superman that this might just be an empty pledge, Aquaman says that it had better not be. And he gives Aquaman a Christmas gift of a snow globe of Metropolis. Then out in space, he meets with Green Lantern, Kyle Rayner. Green Lantern is surprisingly philosophical about it, saying that the man Luthor replaced may have been a crook. And if Luthor's impeached, the next guy might be a crook, if not worse. Superman asks him, well, do you still vote? He says, of course I do, because he has hope. If only he knew at that time that the S also means hope. And Superman gives him a gift as well, a container of Jiffy polish, which cleans rings, bracelets, and other jewelry. From there, Superman meets up with the Flash. The Flash is running across the country on his way to San Francisco to get his wife a box of chocolate. They, too, discuss the election. Shit, I lost my place. Sorry about that. The Flash says that he believes in the American way, even under the current circumstances, but that he also believes in Superman. And if he's asked to, he will literally drag Luthor out of the White House. Superman also gives him a gift of tube socks. Meanwhile, then, Superman meets up with Wonder Woman up at the Antarctic, where it looks like they're engaging in some kind of a wrestling match. I can't imagine Lois Lane would be too thrilled about that. Wonder Woman doesn't care about Luthor, but she does care about the seeming obsession Superman has with the situation, which could cause him to lose his edge. Well, she tells him to go spend some time with Lois, considering the rough year they've had. He gives her a miniature Magnolia replica as a token of a reminder of their time they spent in Valhalla, and the two share a kiss. I can't imagine Lois would be thrilled with that either, because it clearly doesn't look like a peck on the cheek. On to Gotham City, where he meets up with Batman. But Batman says, wasn't it you who said we'd have to put our faith in the American people to do the right thing? Superman just gives Batman a glare and hands him a gift. To Batman, he gives a magnifying glass, which is a gift from Lois. Bruce says that he and Superman will take Luthor down when the time is right. With his mind set somewhat at ease by his colleagues, support, and friendship, Superman then prepares to spend Christmas with Lois in a two-day vacation in the bottled city of Kandor. Even though he asks her about what is worse than Luthor being president, and it ends with happy holidays. And that's my issue, which leads us to believe one thing. Superman is one cheap son of a bitch when it comes to giving Christmas gifts.
Yeah, he's not really, I mean, rubber bands, really?
Seriously? Well, you can never have enough rubber bands, as I think the Martian Manhunter says.
All right, I guess.
What did you make of this mess?
This book, and I have some other comments, but the first thing that jumps out at me is it also seems to be, excuse me, a book where they're focusing on a topic that has nothing to do with the Christmas message, other than the fact that he's giving Christmas gifts when he talks to these people. It has more to do with the Luthor election than anything else.
Yeah.
And I don't really understand why you would do that in a Christmas issue. And then the other thing, which to me is the elephant in the room, is this gimmick that they have of having each meetup by a different artist. And I feel like it really, really takes me out of the story.
Yes. Now, the art is very disturbing. I'm also not a fan of the main artist in this.
Who's the main artist? Is that McGinnis?
I think it's McGinnis. First one?
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of his either. Especially the cover image is so cartoony; it's almost bothersome to me. And then with Plastic Man, that whole area is where he drew it, and I think it's terrible in that section. And I'm sure it's what he intended it to be, but I just don't like it.
It's very, very odd choice. And again, this really, other than the gifts, has absolutely nothing to do with Christmas. I mean, it's kind of decent, for me, it's a decent Christmas cover. Though, again, I'm not a fan of the art per se. But the story is, it's strictly about the election, which I did not pick this on purpose, and I didn't remember that was the plot twist in this.
So I guess the message, and I'm not trying to put this in perspective of saying that it's that it parallels the current state, but I guess the message of this book is they're trying to say, well, if the American people picked Luthor, you got to wait and see how that plays out.
Yeah, that's the message. And I know that was planned, you know, going into this before the real election in 2000 turned out the way it did.
Yeah, well, even that one was disputed at the time. That's the election of the Hanging Chad.
But this was a whole plot line going into, you know, the Luthor presidency and the ultimately the war of Was it called War of the Worlds or something like that?
Well,
World of War.
World of War. It's with them creating a war world on Pluto. I was not familiar with that story.
That's part of it. It's the there's an invasion of Earth and the whole. That's the summer event crossover with DC. Imperiex, I think, is the alien force that they're all fighting, and there's a lot of casualties. I think Wonder Woman's mother is killed, and Atlantis disappears. Is it Atlantis? No. Wonder Woman's... I'm mixing it up. I'm sorry. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. I think it's Lois's father dies. There's a lot of deaths in this. And it all hits its, you know, like apex just as 9/11 happens in the real world.
Mm.
So it was like kind of eerie. It's like the book that comes out the week before it shows the LexCorp towers are on fire. And it like really mirrors the World Trade Center. It's kind of eerie. But that's what the Pluto thing was building into.
And it feels like they're trying to put a more lighthearted feel, but have a strong message here about politics. And again, like we've said a couple of times, the only Christmas thing is that he gives a gift to each one of them, and usually they're something pretty cheap. The other thing about this that stood out to me is the section with Wonder Woman by Ian Churchill. She's drawn like she's a porn star in this set.
Yes.
I mean, this isn't where I go to see things like this. And frankly, I'm not necessarily going to go anywhere to see things like this. But I mean, you have, especially on the last page of their story, mm-hmm. in the middle, the first one, it's like, Her costume is barely covering her breasts at all. And then the second one, she's clearly wearing like a G-string Wonder Woman outfit. It does not look appropriate for a comic book.
Even the penguins are shocked.
Yeah.
This played off.
It's well drawn for what it is, but this isn't supposed to be a girly magazine. It's a comic book. And I don't think it's, again, I don't think it's appropriate to draw the character that way. I think it's like disrespectful to the character.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there were at that time a lot of folks who drew Wonder Woman like this. And this is building off, there was an issue where they were trapped in this like Valhalla place for 1,000 years, engaged in battle. And they escape, and Lois has her nose out of whack that he was stuck with her for the equivalent of 1,000 years. But the kiss at the end, it's not, it does not look like, you know, oh, a kiss on the cheek, you know, have a Merry Christmas.
No, it's drawn as if it's a passionate kiss.
Which is really rather inappropriate.
For a character that's married, absolutely, married to someone else.
The Batman sequence, the art is crap too.
Superman, well, that looks like Bizarro. The McGinnis look. It's Joe Madureira, but it looks similar to the McGinnis art to me.
There was
it's a rare book where I'm going to say that that Rob Liefeld is one of the better artists in here.
Yeah.
He did the Aquaman sequence. I think Mike Waringo's art on the Green Lantern sequence is probably my favorite of the bunch. But I don't think there's any one sequence.
The Flash isn't bad either.
Yeah, Flash by Art Adams. The Flash sequence is... There's very little detail in it, except for the splash page. It's only 3 pages long, and... There's not a lot of detail in there, so I can't give Art Adams too much credit on that one. I mean, they're all short, I guess.
And the Flash is the Wally West Flash.
Right.
He was the Flash at the time.
So.
I
got to say, and I think, you know, we both picked these books somewhat at random. Just, you know, Christmas books. But, you know, I don't think either of us, like, read it and said, oh, this one's a good one for this event. And both of them are disappointing because neither gives a real feel-good Christmas message.
Yeah.
In fact, neither one really gives any kind of serious Christmas message at all.
I'll tell you right up front, if I had read this before I made a choice, I would have picked something else.
I think I would do this. I would have done the same. But you know what, listeners, this is what you get, and hopefully you'll at least enjoy our reviews of them as opposed to the books itself. If nothing else, we're saving you from having to read them.
Though this one takes about 3 minutes to read, it is not a text heavy book.
Yeah.
We're gonna rate this thing.
Yeah, you go.
The cover to me is the best part of this book. And again, I don't particularly care for the style of Superman in particular on this. It's just an art style I don't care for. But the layout is decent. There's a big Christmas tree in the background. I kind of like he has a box of ornaments. Each one is one of the Justice League members at the time. It's a bright, it's a happy type of cover, which is a total misnomer from the way the story goes. But I would give it a solid B for the cover. The interior art is a smorgasbord from decent to absolute crap. So I'm going to give the interior art an overall grade of a C+. The story, it's part of a larger arc. This is at a time where everything is very interconnected in the Superman books. And if you're reading everything, it makes a lot of sense. The Lex Luthor presidency is a major factor into the books at this time. And Our World's at War. That's the name of the crossover. That's building at this point and will come to a crescendo over the forthcoming summer. But it's really not a Christmas story. So while it's part of the overall arc, it takes a little bit away as a Christmas story. And for that, I'm going to give it a B-. So an overall grade of B- on this.
I'm not going to be as generous as you.
Smash it, Paul!
I don't like the art style of the cover. It looks to me like it should be, you know, Superman Adventures from the cartoon, yeah. not from the actual comic. And it presents, the cover is misleading because it presents it in a way that where you're expecting really a Christmas story that you do not get. So, with the combination of not liking the style, not liking the message, I'm going to give it a C- because I just feel like it's not doing its job. The artwork is so inconsistent because of the change of the artists. And the fact that I'm really not too crazy about... I think the only sequence I like is the opening, the very opening sequence with the Linear Men and the War World. And that's nothing special even, really. So I think it's a gimmick that fails. And based upon that, I'm going to say a C- on that as well. And the story... Well, there is no story. Yeah. So how do I give a rating to something that doesn't exist? It's just, you know, it really is just a bunch of pontification with really no story. So I'm going to say, you know, I'm going C- all around. I'm going to say slightly below average on everything. There's a couple of images that are worthwhile, and there's a couple of moments that have a little spark to them, but that's about it. So C minus all around. So that said, I'm going to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. And I'll give to you as you don't have to read this.
And if you've been bad, you'll find copies of these in your Christmas stocking.
Yeah, and you'd happily trade it for some coal. Well, I don't own the Superman issue, which I think you do. I do own the Luke Cage issue, which I think you don't.
I do not. And don't worry, we're not going to be buying each other the books we don't have.
Yeah, I would say that's a success, a pretty good assumption. So, thanks everybody for listening, and have a Merry Christmas if you celebrate. And if you don't, have a Merry Christmas anyway.
Yes, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to all.
God bless us all, everyone.
Thank you so much for listening to our show, and we hope you'll continue to join us each and every week for more good old-fashioned comic book back issue awesomeness. You can contact Back to the Bins to leave feedback, comments, questions, suggestions, and criticisms via email at bins@twotruefreaks.com or by joining the Back to the Bins group on Facebook. Back to the Bins is a proud affiliate of the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Network, which you may find at www.twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is a registered trademark of DiManzo Corp of Milan, Italy. All rights reserved. Please take a moment to stop by the twotruefreaks.com site and check out their many other fine podcasts, won't you? Thanks, and we'll see you next week.